All through this year, on Lost and Found Sound, we have been listening to the past.
I am the Edison phonograph, created by the great wizard of the New World, to delight those who have never
Good evening. This is Admiral.
Serve your friends the beer with that new 1952 tape.
Butterfield, are you aware of the installation of any listening devices in the Oval Office of the President?
Today I also got a letter from Emil. In his P.S., he said we ski in 43.
We've heard the sounds of the dramatic events of the century, the beginning of a war, the climax of a World Series. Other sounds touch on smaller moments.
The whistle of a steam train is one of those. It's from half a century ago. The steam engines were replaced by diesel locomotives, and the diesel horn is just a horn. Older people may remember hearing the steam whistle, and it can still be heard in a few far-off valleys.
If you go back in time to West Virginia, 1910-1920, you'll arrive in the era of the steam train. West Virginia then was mountains and meadows and wild rivers, a few paved roads, and the railroad lines. The steam locomotives with plumes of white vapor and dusty smoke streaming back over the cars full of coal or timber or passengers.
Next stop is there.
The C&O, the Chesapeake and Ohio, finished building its tracks in 1873, connecting the Chesapeake Bay with the Ohio River. And deep in West Virginia on the New River stood a town of railroad legend called Thurmond. From the C&O archives, these numbers for Thurmond, West Virginia in 1 year, 1916. Tons of coal shipped out, 3,575,000. Railway passengers getting on or off at Thurmond, 97,740. These days, only the Amtrak Cardinal might stop at the Thurmond Depot. All the other trains are rolling through the town. Thurmond sits at a tight curve in the valley. The tracks, now owned by CSX, fit between the river and the hillsides. The ridgeline, in all directions, stands 1,000 feet higher. Once the aroma of fine cigars mingled with the coal dust in the air, and gamblers stepped off the trains in Thurmond to stay at the big hotel just across the river, and swing bands played for dinner and dancing. The Depression put an end to most of that, but the town stayed busy and retained a certain reputation. All the C&O veterans have stories about the place. Edward Cobb started out with the railroad in Thurmond. In 1945, he was a messenger boy.
I didn't particularly like it. I was just a little bit afraid down there. Those people back then were mean. They didn't care anything about you, whether you lived or died. But they kind of respected me because I worked for the railroad. And I'd go around between these houses and nobody say anything to me because they knew I was going back here to call this man to go to work. And I wasn't going to bother anybody. But it was an experience.
Now, what do you mean when you say they were mean? What do you mean?
Well, there's a lot of shooting going on down there then. Well, they just kidding, just looking at you.
Mm-hmm.
Gambling, drunkenness, you don't see that now.
Jane Lawson would argue with Edward Cobb. She now lives in nearby Oak Hill, but she spent most of her life in Thurmond. She was the postmaster there and came in 1934 when she was 9 years old.
It was wonderful. The people were all really good, hardworking people. You know, at Thurmond, you never locked your doors. If people had new doors put on, they didn't even know where the keys were. We had a movie. We had a skating rink. We had two churches. When we wanted to go, you know, buy clothes or anything, we went to Charleston on a train, spent the day. There was 14 passenger trains there every day.
But in the 30s and 40s, wasn't it dirty? Wasn't it grimy and sooty?
Oh, of course. I mean, when we first moved there, My mother would get down on her hands and knees and scrub the front porches, and all the neighbors would laugh. They said, that won't last long, because you had to do it almost every day. Have you ever had a train spit on you? Well, the coal trains, you know, some change that they would make, it would cause to be like it was soot, and it was black, and it was wet. So if you touched it, you know, as it come down on you like a soft rain, I mean, you were black. But we lived right along the railroad track. Most people did. I mean, we slept like here, and in the front yard was the trains coming by. And after a week, you didn't notice them.
There's not much of the railroad left these days in Thurmond. For safety reasons, trying to keep its right-of-way clear, CSX has been tearing down the water towers and repair sheds from the steam locomotive days. The coal tower is still standing, empty and rust-stained. The old depot in Thurmond has been restored by the National Park Service. It's now a visitor center. And the Park Service owns many of the houses and the deserted crumbling brick and stone structures of the downtown street. How stable do you think that these structures are?
It could fall on us at any minute, I imagine. I don't think it will, but it could.
Katie Miller, who works for the Park Service, is one of Thurmond's seven residents. She walks with us along the gravel street, alongside the double set of train tracks. We stop in front of the National Bank, established 1906.
This has a combination of decor from when it was a bank and when it was a restaurant, so there's some really gaudy wallpaper in here. We've got the teller's window. All that stuff's still in place. There's a safe back there.
See, gold-flocked wallpaper there. The National Bank of Thurmond. Now, would people have been dressed fancy that worked in here, and people would be coming in for loans? And
people dressed up in those days. The pictures that of the people at the depot waiting for trains showed them in large hats and, you know, big white gowns, and I think it was a time when people dressed when they went places.
Well, let's go out back out in the sunshine here.
Katie Miller and her husband for a few years ran a small general store in Thurmond. It was a place to buy a soft drink, rent a bicycle. They decided to close up because, despite all the warnings, they couldn't keep the tourists off the tracks.
There might be someone putting their ear down to see if a train was coming, or they might have their bicycle leaned on the track, or they might run out to take a penny, or they might be wanting to take a picture at a certain angle that might mean they'd be a little close. Because a lot of people think the train only sticks out as far as the edge of the rail, when really the bulk of the, you know, the thing itself sticks way out. And it's just a little nerve-wracking to observe many, many times. And we were the ones that were going to have to do the EMS and all that stuff if something happened. And so we just finally thought, well, let's just sell bikes by appointment and ride our bikes more and, you know, let people get their drinks up in town.
By 1952, the diesel-electric engines had made steam obsolete on the mainline routes. For a time, though, steam engines continued to be used in logging operations. And in the town of Cass, West Virginia, over in the eastern part of the state, even after the timber was gone, the steam trains continued to be valuable. At Cass, you can see what a lumber town used to look like. and you can ride the scenic railroad. Sit on a bench in one of the open passenger cars as the train climbs up Cheat Mountain. The steam-driven locomotive, with coal burning in the firebox, idles at the station, chuffing out gray smoke. This is a chaise locomotive, restored and well-maintained, gleaming black steel and brass, the steam pressure holding steady, waiting to turn the pistons. When everybody's on board, the conductor waves to the engineer, and engine number 4 begins one more trip. In the first few miles, the altitude gain is 400 feet. There are two switchbacks, the train passing a switch and then backing up into the next section. Then a final long curve to the old logging camp at Whitaker Station. The smoke is blasting out of the stack, and there's a light rain of cinders. People who have heard it are going to say all their life, there's nothing quite like the whistle of a steam engine. Artie Barkley is the shop foreman at Cass, and an engineer for 25 years. He grew up in this lumber town, listening to the steam engines at work.
Okay, your steam whistle is more or less like a pipe organ, kind of. It usually, you take like a 3-chime whistle. You have 3 notes. It's a note blend there to make a musical chord. And
the steam's actually coming up through the...
All right. Yeah. Yeah, that's what blows your whistle. It's the steam right from the boiler. And it's just like one of these little whistles you put in your mouth and blow, where you blow the air out by the little port, you know, and it has that little fine crack there. A steam whistle is the same principle as that.
And how do you do it? You're pulling something?
You have a cord on the inside, and it opens a valve, and whatever, the further down you pull the cord, the louder the whistle gets, and there, that's where you, that's the way they can tell who's blowing the whistle, with the way you shake the cord. It's kind of hard to explain. You can take two whistles, the exact the same, they won't sound the same. Some of them you can put a wahoo on them, you know, more or less to say it's just the way you blow them. Each engineer will have his own technique of blowing a whistle. You know, I can get in an engine and run it up the mountain. People downtown, they can tell when I blow, I'm in the engine. Well, one of the other boys gets in the engine, they can tell when they're running the engine from just the way they blow the whistle.
Was it always fun to pull that whistle, Corey?
Yeah. To hear a good whistle and just a steam engine in itself. You know, it's something about it that catches you. The steam engine there, once it goes by, everything's all exposed on it there. The engine's running, you can see that thing turn over, and here it's a chugging, and smoke flying out of it, where a diesel engine, it just don't talk to you, more or less, you know, say. And you visually see what's going on, you know. And, it's just more action, I reckon you'd say.
Artie Barkley is the shop foreman at the Cass Scenic Railroad State Park. In the mountains in eastern West Virginia, you can lie on your back in the meadow on an afternoon in summer, surrounded by goldenrod, purple aster, and watch the cloud shadows spill across the hills, and listen for a century passing.